Rachel Fuller is a British composer and a concert pianist who's done a lot of different things over the years. She's written music for British television, and every once in a while, she sneaks in a few of her songs on one of her husband's albums. He's Pete Townsend from the rock band The Who. Rachel is also known for her incredible orchestrations, like those she did for Quadrophenia. It was an album originally released by The Who the year she was born in 1973. Well, now her husband is doing some touring in support of Rachel's latest project. It's an animal requiem, and it's featured this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. I'm talking with Rachel Fuller, who has just put out a new recording, and I guess you might call it a project. It's the Animal Requiem. And Rachel, I would love for you to start off by just introducing yourself to people who may not know you. Tell us a little bit about your work as a singer, songwriter, arranger, composer, or whatever other title you use to describe yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm Rachel Fuller. I'm British. I'm a composer, and I've done many things over the years. I started playing piano when I was about 10 years old, so for a good 10 years, I was mostly a concert pianist performer. But I've always loved to compose, and in my early 20s, I started to compose and also do orchestral arrangements, which is a big passion of mine. And then when I was in my late 20s, I'm trying to give you a quick breakdown here, my life in 2 minutes, I got a record deal with Universal in New York, and I released an album called Cigarettes and Housework, which was a little bit angsty, I suppose, but very much enjoyed doing it. Yeah, I've done several things. I've composed for some British television. My husband is also a musician, so I've occasionally collaborated with him and even sneaked in a few songs that I've written onto one or two of his albums. And now I mainly am composing for myself. The Animal Requiem is a project that I worked on and completed last year. And at the moment, I've just finished writing a theatre musical, which is coming out as a soundtrack next year. And I've just started to write a ballet. That's based on the book Jonathan Livingston Seagull. So it's a lot to do with flying. I'm hoping to bring acrobatics in as well as traditional ballet.
Oh, wonderful. Now, you talked about the orchestrations that you've done. And have you done some also for your husband's band, The Who?
I have. I did. Actually, it was such a fun thing to work on. 2-3 years ago, I did an orchestral arrangement of Quadrophenia, which was an album that he wrote and they released in, I think it was 73, which was actually the year I was born. And that it took me about a year to finish the arrangement, and then it was released as an album. And we worked with an amazing British tenor called Alfie Bow, who's got the most extraordinary sort of Pavarotti style voice. And I think initially we were thinking about using a rock singer with the orchestra, but he came to sort of audition, I suppose, and his voice is just perfect. So we had real fun with that. We did 5 shows in America 2 years ago. We played 2 nights at the New York Met. We did Tanglewood in Boston, and we did Chicago, and we did the Greek Theater in L.A.
Well, one of your other great passions is the fact that you are a dog lover. In fact, you even said that dogs are your drug. And you actually didn't even get your first dog until you were well into adulthood. Tell me about that experience and what led you to falling in love with these furry creatures.
Well, I've always loved animals, even as a young child. My father says his first sort of solid memory of me is chasing pigs, which when I was about 2 years old in my Wellington boots in the mud. And growing up, both my parents worked full-time, so we had cats. I grew up with cats. But then as soon as I was sort of grown up enough to have a dog, I actually got my first dog not long after I lost my mother when I was 26. And she died very suddenly, and it was a real shock. So I was very vulnerable, and I got my first golden retriever puppy, who was called Spud. And I just, what can I say? I'm just nuts about all animals, but really, especially dogs. I love having dogs. And over the course of the next few years, Pete had a border collie called Flash. I got another four, mostly rescue. And we ended up with six dogs, which we had for 12 years. You know, they all lived into old age. But because we got them all closely together, they did all start to pass sort of fairly close together. And that was really, I think, what inspired the Requiem. I think it was incredibly cathartic for me. But, yeah, I'm nuts about dogs. I mean, here, I'm in LA at the moment. You know, if I'm out and about going to the pharmacy or walking down the street and I see someone with a dog, I just fall on it like a lunatic. You know, I really miss them when I travel.
Well, since losing your pack of six, you and your husband, Pete Townsend, have taken in four more dogs, maybe more, I don't know.
We have four. We have four at the moment.
And can you tell me who they are and what their names are?
Yep. So we have Tuppence, who's an Irish Terrier. She's the boss, and she's very dominant, but she's very sweet. She's a good boss. She doesn't let, you know, any nonsense in the house, so she's great. And we have Elsa, who we rescued from Antigua 2 years ago. So she was found by the side of the road nearly dead. She was in a terrible, terrible shape. And, in fact, we didn't think she was going to survive, but she did. And I foster dogs in Antigua quite a lot. But I then rehomed them in Antigua, but with Elsa, we brought her home. And then I have Pudding, who's a Chalky, which is half Chihuahua, half Yorkshire Terrier. And he's the only boy, the rest are girls. And then we have Peanut, who's a miniature Yorkshire Terrier. And they're a great bunch. I mean, in the evenings, I sit with my cross-stitch with the dogs all spread out around me in various patterns, which we refer to as dog soup. And, you know, Pete wanders in and out and we sit and watch a bit of telly and it's just heaven. There's nothing like it, really.
Now, here's something I learned about you, is that you were once an organist in a crematorium. Is that right?
It's true. And that's great that you've used the word crematorium, because I wasn't sure that it was the same word in America. I think, do you use funeral home more?
Well, actually, I think they are separate entities.
Yeah.
Like a funeral
yeah.
home is a facility, whereas a crematorium would be more where the cremation occurs. That's probably how we think of it.
Yes. Okay. So it was the local crematorium. I grew up in a seaside town in the UK called Southend, and I rebelled when I was about 16. I got a scholarship to Oxford University, an organ scholarship, but I decided not to go, much to the dismay of my parents. And I got a private scholarship and continued to study the organ. And then when I was 18, I worked for 2 years in the local crematorium playing the organ for the services. So I think in the time I was there, I played for about 2,500 funerals.
Wow. I was curious if that experience had in any way provided you with any food for thought for this latest project, Animal Requiem.
It definitely did. And I'll tell you why, because my experience, because I was working, so I was, you know, when you go to a funeral for a family member or a friend, it's very personal. You're very involved in the grief and the process. But as I was working, I was more detached from it. So from an observational point of view, what I could see is that although a funeral and the service is, of course, very sad and it's a quiet event, I could also see how important it was for friends and family it seems to serve a number of different things. It's a proper goodbye. It's a place where people pay respect, and it's also people celebrate the life, unless it's really tragic, you know, and people, you know, they speak and they laugh and they remember and they honor, and it's dignified and it's sort of a quiet, beautiful thing. And at some point, I think, when we had lost the last of our original pack, I was really stricken with grief. We had a horrible incident where we lost our Yorkshire Terrier last October. And 3 days after she passed away, we lost our poodle. So we lost two of our dogs in 1 week. And I was really stricken with grief. And I suppose I did think about the time that I worked. And I thought, we don't have anything like this for our animals. And they are family members. And grief is grief. It's, you know, some people say, you know, you can't compare the loss of an animal to the loss of a child, for example. And I say, no, of course you can't. It's not comparable. However, grief is the same. It's like there are 10 different things that can make you angry, but the anger that you feel is one anger. So the grief is very real when you lose a pet who's been a member of your family, sometimes for 17 or 18 years, that you feed, that's vulnerable, that's dependent on you, that you care for, and you form this incredibly strong, unconditional bond, which is very innocent and very pure. And, you know, I certainly don't feel like everybody, you know, who loses their pet should have a funeral for their pet. This came out of something different. It was feeling like I wanted to honor the lives of the animals and to commemorate. So it's really a memorial, the music. And my hope was twofold. It was that at some point, perhaps not straight away when you're sort of stricken with grief, you know, people, if they knew about the album, would just take a quiet half hour to listen and commemorate and celebrate and remember their animal and perhaps light a candle at home. But also that there would be concerts held, hopefully around the world, in churches and theatres and school halls, and, you know, that local people would come and celebrate the life of their animal, whether it passed 2 weeks earlier or 15 years earlier. We did a concert in London at the end of January, and we did it in a beautiful church in Piccadilly, in the city centre, called St. James. And 500 people came, and we lit candles and we performed the concert. And I had sent out an email to everybody who'd bought a ticket saying, do bring along a photo of your pet that you're remembering and honouring and celebrating. And I thought, you know, perhaps 20 or 30 people would come up with photos. But I made a big pin board, you know, and put a big gold frame around it. And practically everybody came. They pinned their photo, and the board was just covered with dogs and cats and rabbits and guinea pigs and snakes and lizards. And it really was a magical thing. My intention is not to sort of traumatise or cause anyone pain. It's a beautiful thing when people gather together and celebrate the lives of these beings that we've taken care of, that have given us so much.
Let's talk about the text that you chose for the Requiem. It seems to be somewhat traditional.
It is. It's Latin text. So there are a different number of sections, Requiem Mass. You have sort of the introit, which is the beginning and the entry, and you have the Pia Jesu, and you have the Agnus Dei, which is Lamb of God. And in the original Requiem, there's quite a few sections which talking about hellfire and damnation, so we sort of cut all of those out because essentially we're just interested in, you know, choirs of angels granting everlasting rest and very beautiful, soft words. So most composers just use the lovely bits of the Requiem, as have I.
And those angels that have joined you are the Chamber Choir of London.
Yes.
How did you choose your collaborators? Tell me about them.
So I've worked with the Royal Philharmonic a few times. They're really such a brilliant orchestra, and I'm very fond of their manager, so I decided to record with them. And then I had worked with an amateur choir called the Oriana Choir. This was on the Quadrophenia album. We had quite a big choir. And the conductor and the leader of that choir has just fairly recently put together this new small chamber choir, and they're really extraordinary. So that's how I knew about them. And I just think they do sound like a choir of angels when they sing together. The blend is extraordinary. And it was just joyful, the whole thing, recording and performing and working with them.
Do you have a section that is perhaps a favorite for you, or one that you want to draw our attention to?
I think the prayer of St. Francis. So the prayer of St. Francis is not actually part of a requiem. That was an outside poem. The prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, who you may or may not know was the patron saint of animals. So it felt appropriate to include it, and it was also my mother's favourite hymn. So I included that, and I feel like that's probably the most accessible. I loved all of them. I love all of them. They all feel quite different in tone to me. But honestly, I just sit at the piano, and whatever comes out, comes out. And then I work with that. So.
Well, you've created some very memorable melodies in many of these pieces, like the Kyrie Eleison. That's one that just keeps going through my mind. Is that intentional when you do that? Are you looking for something that we will be able to kind of latch on to?
I think as a composer, I'm fairly what you would call middle of the road. I'm not particularly drawn to contemporary writing or even classical in a Bach Mozart sense. I would say that my natural writing leans more towards sort of film score and theatre, and it's I hope easy listening. I want people to enjoy it, and you know, it's what I write. You know, I don't think I could write anything extraordinary and modern. You know, I just sit down and it comes out, and it's always fairly, I suppose, catchy, I hope. You know, I want people to enjoy it.
It's interesting to me because you were classically trained and you chose not to go specifically down that road for your career, yet you've helped to build bridges to that, I think, by using the orchestration and working with these ensembles. And it's kind of interesting to me how you've done that and perhaps introduced people to classical music through that.
Well, I would love that. I mean, my music taste was quite small when I grew up. I used to love listening to a real mix of what my parents were playing in the house and just music that I fell upon. So I used to listen to a lot of Stevie Wonder and a lot of Joni Mitchell, and then my parents used to listen to a lot of ABBA and the Carpenters and the Beatles. And within that, I was also listening to a lot of classical music, but I liked the romantic composers, so I liked Mahler and Debussy and Chopin and Beethoven. And so I think possibly I'm influenced by all of these people. I can't compare myself to these people, obviously. That would be such an arrogant thing to say. But, you know, Stevie Wonder and Joni Mitchell always have a lot of chords. Their chord structure is, as do a lot of the romantic composers. So I very rarely write a song or a piece of music that has three or four chords in it. You know, I like to really move about. I do. I love both classical and modern. And I guess there is a crossover. I certainly hate to think that people wouldn't listen to it because they just deemed it as classical and therefore, you know, not easy to listen to.
I know that you're hoping to take the Animal Requiem on the road, and you have some concerts already set up. Tell me about your hopes and dreams for this project.
My hopes and dreams for this project are I would like people to perform and put on their own concerts of the Animal Requiem. So I've done three different versions. I've done the full orchestral arrangement, which is the album, and I've done a middle arrangement, which has a church organ and seven instruments, and then there's just the piano vocal one. So my hope for this is that, you know, school choirs could perform the piano vocal one, and amateur orchestras could perform the middle arrangement, and so that people everywhere, hopefully as the word spreads, will perform a concert and invite local people to come and celebrate and remember their animals. That's my hope. And of course, my hope for the album selling is that it will bring some kind of comfort and joy to people who've lost animals, and hopefully raise some money, which can, you know, help people who dedicate their lives to rescuing and looking after and caring for animals that have been, you know, neglected or abused or astray. I wanted to, all the profits from the album sales, I wanted to give to smaller animal charities and shelters around the world who do amazing, amazing things, but always struggle for funds. And I reached out to Paul McCartney, who is a friend of my husband's, and they've known each other for a long, long time, because I wanted to give a nod, if you like, to animal welfare at the end of the album, and I thought a good way to do this would be with a guest track.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
I asked if I could use Blackbird, and he replied immediately and said, yes, of course, and sent me the original studio recording of Blackbird with him playing guitar and singing. And a metronome, I believe.
All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise.
And we arranged orchestra on top of the track.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see.
That was an amazing act of generosity, I feel, on his part.
You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Two final quick questions about you and how you memorialize some of your pets. And you do it not just through your music, but also you have their faces on cushions.
I do. Oh, my goodness. So about 10 years ago, I know it's a terrible, terrible, terrible curse now, but I was a heavy smoker. And I decided to stop smoking, and I thought, I have to find something to do with my hands in the evening or I'll go mad. So I started to do embroidery and tapestry, and I've just continued doing it. And I found a company in the UK where you can send a photograph, any photograph, and they turn it into a cross-stitch chart and send you all the threads. So it's like a colour chart. And so you have your blank fabric and you follow the pattern and the colours. And I've done so many cushions now. Poor Pete, I'm full of these cushions. I'm like a little old lady. It's like every evening I sit down for 2 hours and just cross-stitch, and I bring it everywhere. And I've now got cushions of all six of mine and Pete's that passed away. So I've started doing them for other people. So I'm actually doing one at the moment for Elton John, who lost a spaniel last year called Arthur. And friends of mine who've lost pets. It's it is a crazy addiction, I think, cross stitching.
Okay, one final question. In putting together your Animal Requiem, did you learn anything about yourself? And if so, what was that?
What did I learn about myself? I think I learned to trust the process, to trust my creative process. Because often what happens is, as an artist, I think it's easy to start comparing yourself to others and, you know, and to think, oh, you know, this is not that great, this is not good, no one's going to listen to it. No, and to, in a sense, make it not about ego and to just trust that I am writing what I'm meant to be writing and I do the best that I can do and that that's enough. It's enough. And, of course, I hope that people like what I've written and that it moves them and touches them. That's all I hope for. I don't believe I can sort of heal anyone's grief or, you know, but I think with art, with music, with painting, with poetry, you know, you have the ability to speak directly to the soul. I know that sounds really pretentious, but it sort of bypasses the intellect, I think. So a group of people come together, they listen to something which is universal, and there's a group consciousness even within it.
An Animal Requiem with music by Rachel Fuller. I'm Julie Amacher, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks. If you're enjoying this podcast, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app.